All right, good evening everyone, and welcome to this event organized by CICE, the London School of Economics Center for Research in Southeastern Europe, as well as the Albanian Student Association here at the LSE. It gives me great pleasure to chair this event. My name is Arjen Gyontya. I'm an associate professor here at the Department of Social Policy at London School of Economics. And it's a great pleasure for me to introduce the Honourable Mr. Dzmir Bushati, the Albanian Minister of Foreign Affairs, who is on a visit here in London and has agreed to give this public lecture here at the LSE. Before I give the floor to Mr. Bushati, I would like to say a few words about Mr. Bushati. Mr. Bushati has a relatively long political career by the Balkan standards, where there is a large number of young politicians. He has been elected in two terms in the Albanian parliament, and he has been very active in European integration, in particular because he chaired the commission, Parliamentary Commission on European Integration, and has played an active role while in opposition. Also, Mr. Bushati is a member of the steering committee of the Socialist Party, so he's in the top of the pyramid of the Socialist Party, as well as he is the present foreign minister of Albania. Mr. Bushati, before becoming a politician, had also a long career in terms of the civil society. He founded and chaired for quite a while the Foundation on European Movement in Albania. As you can see, his career has been into European integration and European law and relations. But what it gives me more pleasure is that Mr. Bushati also has an academic career, and that's why we want him here at the LSE to address this audience. And Mr. Bushati has a particular interest and also speciality on European law and EU enlargement process, and has been giving a lot of public lectures in different institutions, not just in the Balkans, Albania, Kosovo and other countries, but also in other European and North American universities. Today's lecture is on long-standing stability in Southeast Europe, from security to economic growth. Before I give the floor to Mr. Bushati, he'll give a short lecture, as he said, and we'll allow more time to questions and discussions with the audience. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I'm very happy to be here this evening, and I would like to start by thanking the European Institute for making this event possible. In a previous life, as mentioned by moderator of this debate, I spent many years studying and teaching European law, and it feels good to be back in an academic setting. I hear that there were some difficulties with finding a suitable lecture room, but the number of attendees tells me something about the interest that Southeastern Europe still awakens among foreign policy practitioners. The reason why I choose to speak to you today about long-standing stability in Southeast Europe is that our region, also referred to as the Western Balkans, or as I often like to say, Adriatic Europe, finds itself in a very different situation from the end of the 20th century. So I'm here to bring some updates, so to speak. In a way, this new situation in the Western Balkans mirrors the tremendous changes that our continent has undergone during the last decade. Even if our region is not producing any more unfortunate international news, if I set aside, of course, football encounters, it remains a part of the continent that still feels the spillover effect of the growing international instability. Many current challenges and difficulties the European Union is experiencing within itself and in its enlarged neighborhood are also affecting the Balkans in so many ways. First, there is the Ukrainian crisis that has in fact developed into a prolonged geo-economic confrontation. In the eastern neighborhood, we are facing a revisionist tendency that has been challenging the European order in the past months. Russia's actions in the eastern neighborhood imply that the use of force is becoming again a way to achieve geopolitical goals in Europe. Second, in the southern neighborhood and the Middle East. Fundamentalism and terrorism destabilize the whole region. Religious extremism has paved the way to extreme savage confrontation across the Middle East. Third, the Eurozone crisis is still here and has already hampered economic growth in the Western Balkans, as two of our region's main economic partners, namely Italy and Greece, are still having a difficult time. How have Balkan countries reacted to these challenges? Well, events in the East have pretty much divided the Western Balkans. There were those that aligned with EU and US sanctions against Russia, and there were those that did not. In fact, foreign policy alignment with the EU's common security and defense policy is an obligation that is an integral part of the network of the stabilization and association agreements that currently bind Western Balkans to European Union. Whereas events in the East brought back distant memories of geopolitical clashes, the conflicts fueled by religious extremism in the southern neighborhood found Europe unprepared. Large-scale religious confrontations in Syria, Iraq, and the new threat posed by ISIS have further destabilized the Middle East. Nonetheless, the Western Balkans have shown some character. Security and legislative measures have increased our preparedness and our capacity to react. It is fair to say that today, the Western Balkans are Europe's gatekeepers against the violent consequences of religious extremism. What about the response to the European crisis, to the Eurozone crisis? Unfortunately, we didn't have a big bazooka, such as the European Central Bank, on our side. Yet, all countries of the region went into sometimes painful fiscal consolidation programs. So the question we need to answer at this point is the following one. Is the Balkans a region in political, strategic, and economic terms? In political terms, not yet. Indeed, all of the Western Balkan countries' main strategic goal is full membership in the European Union. Yet, the enlargement process has not gone well for everyone. In strategic terms, not yet. From Lisbon to Istanbul, there are still security gaps. Three of the Western Balkan countries are NATO aspirants. There is also Kosovo, with a clear Euro-Atlantic orientation. And there is also Serbia. Recently, I've heard that Serbia wants to join the alliance, but this remains to be assessed by NATO member states. What about in economic terms? The answer, unfortunately, still not yet. The region is not connected yet in economic terms, neither itself nor with the European Union. As you know, from Tirana, it's easier to get to Rome, Vienna, Istanbul, and Munich than Belgrade, Sarajevo, or Skopje. Poor infrastructure and poor energy connectivity mean that the overall level of exchanges remains negligible at a time when sustainable economic growth is a precondition to guaranteeing long-term stability. The Western Balkans is, however, still a work in progress. Some countries are in the EU, some out, some in between, few are in NATO, others don't want to join. Let me just elaborate a little bit on how Albania currently views this regional patchwork. First, there are still some prominent dividing lines in the region. As I mentioned at the very outset, there are countries such as Albania that have a record of 100% alignment with EU's foreign policy. Other neighboring countries have only partial alignment with EU positions. Another important division is the one along ethnic lines, still a risk in some countries of the region. Furthermore, new actors have become more active in the region, often taking advantage of those dividing lines. Some are coming back, such as Russia and Turkey. Others are new but are proving to be strong contenders, such as Gulf countries or China. One important step in the region has been the dialogue between Kosovo and Serbia. The implementation of the April Agreement is, in our view, the only means that will help solve a number of issues to the benefit of the citizens living in these two countries and will pave the way from normalization towards reconciliation. We also believe that steps should be taken to ensure that the dialogue of the Serbian government with the political representatives of ethnic Albanians living in Preševo Valley is resumed. Albania has continuously encouraged the Albanians there to engage in talks with the Serbian authorities as the means to achieve their legitimate rights based on European standards. Regarding Bosnia and Herzegovina, Albania supports the integrity and sovereignty of Bosnia and Herzegovina and the country's efforts to Euro-Atlantic integration. In this context, we would like to encourage Bosnia and Herzegovina to review its position towards the independence of Kosovo. In the same spirit of regional reconciliation, Albania supports all sincere efforts that will allow the full implementation of the provisions of the Ohrid Agreement as the backbone of peace and democratic stability in Macedonia. Albania supports the cohesion of Macedonian society and its Euro-Atlantic integration path. We see the participation of all nationalities in the state-building efforts as the best guarantee for the future of the multi-ethnic state. As you can see, there are similar features in the region, such as persisting challenges to economic rule of law, issues of statehood and poverty. Even if peace is now an acquis in the Balkans, the key question now is how to transform this into economic prosperity to the benefit of our citizens. The Balkans are indeed not producing international news anymore. Yet, in a certain way, they are becoming a boring place. Yet the European perspective we all agree about is yet to be materialized in our region. If the Balkans could be considered as a success story, it was largely because of the EU perspective and US engagement in the region. Nowadays, the greatest risk for the Western Balkans is the lack of geopolitical clarity. We are living in interesting times, but we need to ask ourselves if we would like to behave strategically or shy away from responsibilities by giving in to electoral trends and populism. Indeed, if the EU perspective is derailed, I'm not sure that the region will become prosperous. At the end of the day, you have to feed economic growth. You have to feed job creation. This is obviously what happened in Ukraine. Lack of clarity and incentives brought about a crisis of such magnitude that it fractured the country. Geopolitical clarity about the unfinished business in Balkans is what is at stake with the new European Commission approach towards enlargement. Let me be very clear. We are not asking for alternatives. We are not asking for discount tickets. Also, we don't believe in miracles, and we know we are not as advanced as Visegrad countries were back in the days. What is crucial to understand is that in financial terms, measured by net inflows from EU funds, the difference between member states and candidate countries is by a factor of more than 5. Furthermore, IPA funds are mainly used to build institutions and prepare sectoral policies. Only limited IPA funds can be used to build necessary national and local infrastructure or extend long-term resources to improve human capital and build innovative small and medium enterprises. Importantly, since the financial crisis, limited fiscal space has been largely utilized to stabilize the economy, and little is left for launching new projects, in particular those of regional and EU importance. Yet, we are not complaining. We are merely asking that the EU process does not become a moving target. There is a concern that with Brussels as a hub, the interactions between the countries of Western Balkans can easily be mistaken as partnership of convenience rather than relationship of trust. Trust requires nurturing. It means we do not avoid discussing issues we consider sensitive. One of my biggest worries as I took office last year was that in the Balkans, we still spend too much time on how to sit around the table rather than how to substantiate our cooperation platforms, which makes our regional cooperation mechanisms feel like empty diplomatic exercise at times. It is against this background that the Western Balkans Conference was held in August 2014 in Berlin under Chancellor Merkel's leadership. The process started in August with the Berlin Conference was designed as an instrument of credibility and predictability in order to avoid empty diplomatic encounters. In my view, it provided the Western Balkans with a clear opportunity to collectively define a vision of where we'd like to see our region in the next 5 to 10 years. In this collective vision, economic governance becomes our common denominator. By economic governance, I mean not only a set of economy policy reforms, but also a new set of instruments of our foreign, of our region, and a set of concrete projects with regional impact. A first step in this direction was taken by the European Commission, which developed a platform of enhanced cooperation within the stabilization association process, a platform that brings incentives for us to focus on a key related areas such as the rule of law, economic governance, and connectivity. Now, where does Albania stand in all of this? As I mentioned earlier, Albania shares the same state-building challenges as the rest of Western Balkan countries. Yet, we have been consistent in aligning our position with those of the European Union. Indeed, we believe the EU is not just a common market, but also a union built on values that include a common approach to foreign and security policy issues. Developments in the EU's neighborhood underline the importance of this common approach. In this new security architecture, stability in the Balkans becomes more important. As the only NATO member states in the Western Balkans after Croatia joined European Union, Albania remains firmly committed to good neighborly relations and the promotion of democratic stability in the region. The forthcoming visit of Prime Minister Rama in Belgrade next week is an expression of this commitment. I believe that Albania has demonstrated on many occasions during the last few years that it is capable of carrying both a dynamic and stabilizing role in the Balkans. The current chairing of several regional initiatives, such as the Southeast European Cooperation Process and the US Directive Charter, are clear signs that we stand here to enhance the region's chances to become a success story. I'd be happy to answer to your questions during our Q&A session on Albania's specific role as a pillar of regional stability in the Western Balkans. But now, let me conclude by remarking that there seems to be a lot of goodwill in the region right now to consolidate the positive momentum we have witnessed in the past year. Nevertheless, beyond peace and stability, the EU narrative on Western Balkans should focus more on economic development and connectivity and supplement those with relevant financial incentives. For this new deal to be materialized, you need two elements. First, the EU should view the enlargement process as a strategically important project. European interests are currently most threatened by developments in its neighborhood. One priority stands out. The EU must take care of unfinished business in the Western Balkans. Second, in Southeast Europe, democratic stability needs to be consolidated by improving economic governance, economic rule of law related reforms, and also through concrete gestures showing mature political will to solve pending bilateral issues. The only way to bring this forth is through the necessary infrastructure and energy projects that our citizens need and that will bind us together. Of course, in this endeavor, as in other struggles, that both our region and Europe have endured in the past, success is not final. But as Winston Churchill famously said, failure is not fatal either. It is the courage to continue that counts. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bushati, for your views on the politics of the Balkans and economics as well, and the future of the Balkans. And one thing that the Balkans never fail is a large audience at the LSE. It's always crowded, and LSE never fails to host a strong debate. Balkans are never boring, not when it comes to academic studies. I would open the audience for questions. I would like you to state your name and your affiliation before you ask a question to Mr. Bushati. And please keep it short so we can allow everybody to ask a question or make a statement. Yes, please. Yes, the gentleman at the end. Yes, please.
Yeah, Bernard Casey from the University of Warwick and the European Institute here. You talked about the Western Balkans, but my question is, how much of an identity does the Western Balkans have as opposed to a set of fragmented parts? You talked about the Berlin Conference as being an occasion which did bring the leaders together. One of the problems that you also mentioned is the very poor opportunities to relate one country to another. Transport infrastructure seems to be extremely poor. And there seems to be an enormous resource need here. To what extent can the countries, by acting together, help to compensate for some of this infrastructure resource need which brings them together? And how important is a contribution from outside, including the contribution which the European Union might be able to make? But the group of countries together and not to individual countries.
Thank you.
We take one by one.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for the question. I believe one of the main aims of Berlin process that was launched this August is to cement regional cooperation in the Western Balkans, because as I mentioned also during my introductory remarks, the region is not yet as such. It's rather fragmented, and we know very well that national budgets are not sufficient. There has been very notorious in the past when prime ministers from neighboring countries are meeting together. They are going on media and saying basically during the press conference that we committed to finish this part of railway or to finish this part of the highway, but they never did it. They never did it. Not because of lack of will, because everybody would like to see a country being much more modern and much more transformed, but because of the lack of financial resources. And the key element here is also how to attract not only European institutions, but also private capital, because one of the aspects of Berlin process is how to bring together basically Western Balkan countries, European Commission, European institutions, and also private capital. I believe there is a growing consensus among Western Balkan countries about two major projects, infrastructure projects that basically would be ready for feasibility study and later on would be hopefully financed. The one that is known as Blue Highway that would basically connect Slovenia, Croatia, Montenegro, Bosnia, Albania with Greece. So basically this would ensure a physical connection of Western Balkans with European Union. And there is also another project that would connect Nish, Pristina and Durrës, basically allowing Serbia having an access to Mediterranean Basin and to the so-called corridor 8. And as I mentioned during my introductory remark, there is positive momentum that needs to be fed, and this positive momentum is driven by the common denominator, which is the EU accession process. And there are many differences, but the one that I mentioned with the Visegrad countries is the fact that we are not yet a region, although we share more or less the same political challenges stemming from economic rule of law, statehood, mutual recognitions, and so on and so forth. But I have noticed in the last year that when it comes to the economic development, when it comes to projects of regional nature, of regional impact, the political will is there.
Yes, please.
Well, my name is Dmitry Bechev, and I'm a visiting fellow here at LISI, the European Institute. And thank you, Minister, for your stimulating speech. It's always a pleasure to have the voices in the region. My question, I'm afraid, is about domestic politics. For a long, long time, the stories making headlines concerning Albania were to do with domestic polarization, with the contested elections, boycotts and so on and so forth. So it was a breath of fresh air for region watchers when actually a transfer of power occurred very smoothly last time around when your party came to form a coalition and be in government. Now, I think you have the benefit of the doubt that you have reformist commitments, but certainly cynics would say that it's all the same, it's just a new political tribe has taken over, and now they play the usual game of patronage and clientelism, appoint their own people and carry on. What would be your rejoinder? I mean, what's the argument that actually you have long-term commitment to issues like the rule of law that you mentioned in your speech? Because obviously this is at the heart of your agenda as well.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question, and I thought I was in London, but thank you also for reminding problems back home. No, I mean, just, countries in the region are being divided in different baskets, and Albania certainly has comparative advantage when it comes to interfaith harmony, for instance, being demonstrated also during Pope Francis' visit in Tirana, as he chose Tirana's first European capital. When it comes to the statehood issues, but on the other hand, political polarization is quite high. And there is also there is always a need for all-inclusiveness, and there is always a need also for continuity in terms of reform process. I believe the fact that Albania has been granted candidate status this June is not only due to generosity coming from EU member states, but it is because of the political determination that has been displayed by this government in embarking with some very drastic and painful, I would say, reforms in areas related to rule of law, organized crime, and corruption. Yes, now we are into a more, let's say, challenging situation, because the bar is higher. We've got the candidate status, and now we aim to have a date for starting the accession talks, which means that the bar is higher, the levels of scrutiny would be much more detailed, and I'm sure that this would be beneficial not only for the government, but also for the oppositions and other state institutions, civil society, business community, and so on and so forth. And in this way, would stimulate more sustainable progress.
Thank you.
Adam Seviu. The Serb Prime Minister was here last week and he outlined key economic reforms which would mean that Serbia wasn't the poorest country when it joined the EU. What plans does Albania have to ensure that it isn't the poorest country when it becomes a part of the EU, and how realistic are those plans?
Economic plans, you mean? I think we are... Thank you for the question, and I think we are into... different stages of reform process when it comes to the economy. I'm pretty aware of the fact that Serbia and Serbian government recently has launched a plethora of reforms in relation to economy, which are really harsh in terms of cutting the ages, cutting the subsidies to some of the enterprises, and also cutting the scheme of pensioners. These reforms in Albania, I think, have been completed at an earlier stage, which puts us in different footing from Serbia. When it comes to the economic reforms process in relation to EU membership, I was referring also in my introductory reforms that all countries of the region are put against the same set of reforms that they should undergo, and namely those reforms are related to the economic governance. Whether Albania is ready or whether other countries in the region are ready, my answer is no. Whether we are on the right track and whether we are understanding, first of all, the magnitude of these reforms, which are going to be painful because we are talking about structural reforms, my answer is yes, the trend is positive. And this trend has been confirmed and reconfirmed by the EC, European Commission progress reforms, have been reconfirmed recently also by other specialized international agencies that are confirming the positive trend of Albania. And here we would need also a level of interaction between countries of the region, and it comes back to the question of identity and fragmentation of Western Balkans, also in terms of reform process. And here we are talking also about the second aspect of the economic reforms, which is related to connectivity. It is not, let's say, an accident that EU is asking from all Western Balkan countries to set up similar structures, national investment committees, coordinators for these massive projects, and it is not an accident that in this enlargement strategy paper that has been published this fall, you see an additional economic criteria for Western Balkans, the one that is related to economic governance. But we need to work together, and we have to motivate also financial and human resources in order to materialize some of these reforms. I followed also Serbian Prime Minister talk here. I agree with Tim that it was a very vivid one, and I hope that he is as modest as he appeared here last week.
All right, thank you. Let's have a round of calling then.
Mr. Ushwati, two questions. One, in regards to the Prime Minister's visit to Serbia, could you give us an idea if he's going to stand up to Serbian politicians and leadership on quite a few matters? One, according to the rights of the Albanian people in Serbia, as well as the recent shambles and match. And the second question, amongst many other things, the European Union and its members want from the Albanian politicians some form of cooperation. As you are aware, the Albanian opposition is not in parliament, and their main reason is to do with the fact that one of their members was attacked by at least one or two MPs which are members of the party. What do you suggest to do in order to better Albania's image on that matter?
Thank you.
Thank you for both questions. Concerning the first one, Prime Minister is visiting next Monday Belgrade, and certainly this is going to be the first ever visit of an Albanian Prime Minister to Serbia. I've read several articles in media saying that this is the first visit after 68 years, but I would like to clarify one aspect that Enver Hoxha visited Yugoslavia when Belgrade was the capital of Yugoslavia, and here we are going to have the first visit of an Albanian Prime Minister to Serbia. So there is a difference to that. There has been Albania-Serbia relation has not been an easy one, as you know it very well. There is a list of pending issues that we would like to address one by one, starting with the agreement on mutual recognition of diplomas that would give the possibility of Albanians living in the southern part of Serbia in the Preshov Valley, basically to practice the knowledge they got also in the Albanian universities. We would like also to advance other agreements with Serbia which are of mutual importance. And it goes without saying that Tirana and Belgrade are two important capitals in the region, which could, in a way or another, also influence positive developments in the region. So I believe this relation is key for democratic stability in the region, and it's key also for the advancement of the region to the European waters. On one hand, there are similarities. We are both EU candidate countries, but there are also differences. We are a NATO member country, as I explained. Serbia is not yet, and it's not clear whether Serbia would like to join NATO or not. Albania it has clearly positioned itself in full alignment with EU's and US foreign policy, especially when it comes to international crisis. Serbia hasn't, and we have always urged Serbia to do the same. There are issues such as Kosovo, where our differences are deep, but I have to say that this is not something which makes difference only between Serbia and Albania, because Kosovo is a reality in the region, in Europe, and it is also an international reality with more than 108 recognitions and a solid opinion from International Court of Justice. So in a way or another, this issue is keeping away Serbia from the West, and is keeping away also from the European perspective. So, to put it simply, the visit is well prepared by our side. We know very well also what would be our ambitions for deepening the cooperation with Serbia and other countries in the region. And leaving aside modesty, I must say that being a NATO, the only NATO member country in the region, we are somehow responsible also to extend the positive influence in the region. And as it has been proved also in the past, Albanians were a decisive factor in bringing the region closer to Euro-Atlantic waters. When it comes to the incident that has happened in the parliament, I'm sure you must have followed Albanian media and also the reactions. There has been a clear distancing stance from Prime Minister and also from the leaders of the ruling majority in Albania. There has been also an investigation launched by prosecution office for those who are supposed to be responsible. I'm saying those who are supposed to be responsible because we have to respect also the principle of presumption of innocence, although there has been, as you know it very well, there has been also footage on the surface from the incident in the parliament. And as long as there has been investigation launched by prosecution office, I don't see a reason for boycotting the parliament.
Thank you.
I'm Tim Trudeau, I'm the correspondent covering your region for The Economist. Just to follow up about this, the visit of the Prime Minister, are you going?
Yes.
Do you think that, in view of what happened at the football match and the things that were said in its wake, what will be very important, I think, is not just whether you have agreements on university recognitions from South Serbia and Albania. Of course, that's important, but it will be the kind of mood music. It will be, can you kind of make a kind of breakthrough move the publics, the Albanian publics of the region and the Serbian public beyond what happened? And that's going to be quite hard. Do you think it's possible? And I've actually got one other slightly, I would say, perhaps nerdish question, which is that you did mention Ukraine. And there have historically been very small Albanian communities along the Black Sea. Are you in touch with them? Are you kind of worried about them? And do they really, are they kind of in your purview as foreign minister?
Thank you for both questions, Tim. First, whether I believe that there would be a breakthrough next week or not, I would prefer to speak about normalization process. The fact that this is the first ever visit of an Albanian prime minister to Serbia shows that we need to normalize relations with Serbia. I refer to this agreement on mutual recognition of diplomas because this is a very sensitive issue for Albanians who are living in Preshov Valley, and this is a sign also of normalization process because basically we have such agreement with most of other countries in Europe and the world, so this would be also a clear sign of political will from both sides that we would like to move forward, to open a new chapter and to discuss about concrete projects that would connect more countries and would produce more democratic stability in the region. And I think it's very important to it's doable, and it's very likely that we would undergo through this normalization process. For those who don't believe and for those who pose legitimate question mark, I always refer to what happened after the Second World War here in Europe, and when Germany and France decided to pull together coal and steel industry. It was, in a way or another, generator of the war, of the conflict. So the fact that we are witnessing more political will, appetite as well, from Albania and Serbia and others in the region to sit together and discuss about concrete projects, is a signal that the normalization process is doable. But I believe, as the recent events of recent weeks and days showed us, below the surface is, there is a recent history, and it needs time to digest the past. On Ukraine, yes, we have been in contact with Albanians. There is a small community of Albanians living not only in Ukraine, but as you mentioned, in the whole area, and we have been in contact with them. Up to now, there has been only sporadic events that have affected their daily life. At least, this is the information we get from there.
Thank you. The girl there.
Diana Janet. I'm a Muslim student at LSE. I wanted to ask you whether you believe that the Albanian state has a special moral obligation to ethnic Albanians living in other Balkan countries. And relating to that, if so, do you think that the Albanian government is doing enough? And particularly as the case of Macedonia and the riots last summer.
Thank you for the question. It's not about moral obligations, it's about constitutional obligations in the case of Albania. When it comes to the events in Macedonia, I stated also during my introductory remarks here that would like to see our neighboring country Macedonia being in a very good shape, democratically speaking, respecting fully the Ohrid agreement, which is unfinished business in our view, and our view corresponds to the view of international community, evidence in all documents and reports in relation to Macedonia. We would like to see, as I mentioned, multi-ethnic society and state, and not a country that would be divided according to ethnic lines. It is in our interest, it's in Balkans' interest and also Europe's interest to have democratic and stable Macedonia, where Macedonians and Albanians and also other minorities live together in peace and harmony. We're in constant communications, not only with Macedonian authorities, but also with Albanian political elite, if I may use this term there. And our messages have been quite clear in the past.
Thank you.
Gazim Krastucin, Nash Fellow at the University College London. I have two questions. The first one regards the issue of citizenship. Albania is one of the few countries in the region that doesn't extend citizenship rights to its ethnic in living in the neighborhood. However, the previous prime minister, before he left the office, he approved a decree that would extend citizenship rights to some of the Albanians living in the region, with the exception of Kosovo Albanians. So what's the position of your government on that? And the second question regards the issue of the border with Greece. So is there any...
maritime border, I mean.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gzim, for both questions. It started actually with Dima, and it's like it's being spread like a disease that you ask also questions which are related to the political environment back home and to the promises of the former prime minister. Albania has a contractual obligations with European Union. As you know, we are part of the part of the positive list of Schengen, and it has been very difficult for Albania and other countries in the region to move from negative to positive list of Schengen due to the reform process in the area related to the rule of law and security and border management. And this is not possible for the time being also due to the current engagement Albania has with the European Union. The rest, it's populism and it's purely political propaganda. When it comes to the maritime border, to the draft agreement on maritime border with Greece, you know probably very well the position of this government. When we were in the opposition, we brought this agreement before Constitutional Court. Constitutional Court repealed it. It found unconstitutional. Now we would like to work with Greek authorities on a new agreement that would be mutually beneficial, and first and foremost, of course, would be based on international law.
Well, as chair's right, I'll reserve the right to myself to ask the last question. Usually at the end of these talks, I'm supposed to conclude, but I don't want to conclude this time, and there is a reason for that. I mean, being for a very long time at the LSE, we have been hosting here quite a few prime ministers, ministers of foreign affairs, ministers of economics, and there is always this liberal attitude when they come to LSE or in any other institutions abroad about this collaboration. I don't want to sound cynical. Collaboration, joint projects, I know it takes two in a relationship or even more in the case of the Balkans. I want to move to real politics. I don't want any guarantees from you in a way of, I can't ask them.
Thank you.
But what are the real projects that you are going to pursue in the Balkans? In a way, in the visit with, or if there is anyone, with a visit with Rama. You mentioned education one. I think, are there any other concrete projects that you want to pursue and you can see the region integrated?
Thank you for the question. I mentioned Berlin process, and I would like to call it process, because if I refer to the statement of this conference, of this summit, there is a time span. It's 4 years. There are concrete commitments and obligations, be it political or economical, and there are areas where countries of the region and European Union should work together. One of these areas is transport and infrastructure. And I refer during my presentation to concrete projects that would like to develop. If we speak about Ionian-Adriatic corridor or blue corridor, this is not only infrastructure corridor, but it's also linked with the Ionian-Adriatic pipeline that is supposed to link the Ionian-Adriatic pipeline with Trans-Adriatic pipeline that would bring gas from Caspian to the Mediterranean. So basically would involve in a way or another not only Greece, Albania and Italy as it stands nowadays, but also other Western Balkan countries. We are discussing about projects on how to boost small and medium enterprises in the region, given the fact that some of these small and medium enterprises are moving due to the crisis from EU territory into non-EU territory due to the facilities and other flexibilities a non-EU member country could offer. We are under consideration of the creation of a new youth center in Balkans. It's a little bit premature to share the details with this audience, but the idea was discussed in Berlin, and this Albanian-Serbian youth center would mirror in a way or another the French-German model after the Second World War. So basically those are few projects, and for the very first time I witnessed in Berlin a political will and appetite to discuss about those issues rather than quarreling about the flag, the sitting order and the speaking order among Balkan countries. And that's why I thought this is a good sign for a new beginning, and I think we should work all together for this to be materialized. I thank you very much.
Well, let me